Made Mesple singing Arpège by Fauré with Jeanine Rice at the piano. And so this edition of Sunday Morning draws to a close. I do hope you've found it interesting, and thank you so much for listening. Next week, James Jolly is back with his own choice selection. I'll certainly be listening at home while raiding my own shelves for my next appointment with you, which will be in 3 weeks' time. In the meantime, enjoy your listening and do join James next Sunday, same time, 9 o'clock, here on Radio 3. Sunday Morning is a unique production for BBC Radio 3, with studio production this week by Lyndon Jones.
Oscar Wilde.
Some love too little, some too long.
Marilyn Monroe.
Mr. President.
The Rolling Stones.
Hooray!
And Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Why is it always the naughty ones that get the attention? This week, our troublemaking composer of the week is Mozart. We'll explore the most volatile years of his life and the delicate masterworks that ensued, from the E-flat piano concerto in the year he came of age to the frankly scandalous canon in B-flat from the year of his notorious marriage, and so on. He certainly has our attention. Join me, Donald MacLeod, for my Composer of the Week, Mozart. Every day this week from tomorrow at midday and replayed at 6:30, except tomorrow when it's at 6:15 on BBC Radio 3.
Well, next on BBC Radio 3, it being 1 minute past midday, Private Passions, and Michael Barclay's guest is the artist and creator of Spitting Image, Roger Law.
Roger Law, who was the evil genius behind the mocking caricature puppets of Spitting Image, the award-winning television series, which ran for over 12 years. No politician escaped. John Major was entirely grey and in underpants. Mrs. Thatcher cross-dressed and chomped cigars. Tony Blair's grin was as wide as a shark's. When it ended in 1996, Law transported himself to Australia, where he bought paint and brushes and, in his words, began chasing rainbows. From there, a growing interest in ceramics took him to China, and for the last 15 years, he's been completely immersed in making huge and beautiful ceramic pots decorated with underwater plants and sea creatures. They're on view at the moment at the Sladmore Gallery in London. I've been looking at them, and in fact you can too, because we'll put them on the Private Passions page of the Radio 3 website. But perhaps you could describe them for us.
Well, I think it's pretty well known I'm interested in the surreal and the grotesque. And in a different sort of way, Australia's full of it. You only have to think of the platypus. There's a weedy sea dragon that's under the water at Bondi Bay, of all places, and it's about 9 inches long, and it's hugely exotic. And I started making drawings, sketches of wetlands, creatures, flora and fauna, and really had no idea what I was going to do with them. And you can't be in Australia for long without becoming aware of China. And I first went to China on a cultural exchange and realised that if I wanted to work in workshops again, this would be the place.
Of course, one forgets, because of the fame of the Spitting Image, your credentials as an artist. And so this was a return to what you really loved doing in many
ways. It was the same thing, really, because, I mean, the puppets were surreal and grotesque. And I've been told quite recently that grotesque can also mean beautiful. Now, my pots are baroque, to say the very least. But some people find them beautiful, but occasionally you slip into being funny on a pot. I don't really see the difference. And of course we made, Peter and Fluck and I, who modelled the puppets, we made ceramics from time to time. We had ugly mugs, the Mrs. Thatcher teapot and the Ronald Reagan coffee pot, the royal egg cups.
So you make these pots in China, in a city where they've traditionally made ceramics. And in fact, your first piece of music takes us to China, music you bought in a street market.
Yes, I also do a bit of radio for BBC Radio 4, and I was in Yiwu, where they sell everything you don't need. If you take a Polaroid of something you want, you can buy it there. 99% of all Christmas decorations are made there. And it was really quite difficult. They've got 10 Heathrow terminal size markets. And oddly enough, they're all family businesses. And this music got us over all the boring bits. We played it everywhere and roared with laughter. I've no idea where, who wrote it or what it is, but it's amusing.
It is very funny, but it could also drive you mad, couldn't it?
Yes, it could. You need to be in a car full of people.
I think you must play that to Stephen Fry, because he did Private Passions and had entirely humorous music. And the piece that drove him into hysterics was Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass doing A Walk in the Black Forest. And it had a similar quality, you know, something which you just listened, you just couldn't stop laughing. Well, Chinese music, chosen by my guest today, Roger Law. Now, we've struggled a bit to identify that, Roger, because, you know, this is Radio 3 and we like to be very precise. And we sent the CD sleeve off to a translator, but they were stumped. All they've been able to decipher is that this recording is from a test disc for a car hi-fi system. I knew you'd like that. Anyone listening who knows what it is, do indeed contact us via the Radio 3 website. Looking at photographs of your ceramics, it strikes me, Roger, that they're as beautiful in a way as your spitting image puppets were grotesque. Is this a kind of, not a penance, but is this the other side of the savage satire of your younger self, do you think?
Oh, quite possibly. I mean, satire is wonderful, but most of it's ephemeral. You do it in a newspaper and it's fish and chips, and spitting image was never repeated. The pots are a little more permanent.
I've always thought that to get that really pointed, sharp satire that you achieved, that must come from a sort of fundamental fury sometimes. I mean, do you feel you had that when you were younger?
Well, like the pot, of course, most young men do. But a lot of it comes from observation, in the same way as the pots do. I was listening to the radio the other day, and they were talking about Hilary Mantel's book of short stories. I know I'd read the one on Thatcher because it interested me, and I'd picked up on she's describing Thatcher walking down the road, and she said she toddles. Now, if you look at footage of Thatcher, that's exactly what she does, and I wish I'd picked up on that sooner.
Interesting, that the power of observation and then translating it into something which is absolutely memorable, which you did in many ways. They were born in the 80s, the spitting image puppets, a collaboration, as you said, with Peter Fluck, whom you'd met, I think, 20 years earlier at art school in Cambridge.
We'd be about 16.
Yeah.
And he was an intellectual because he got to grammar school.
Yeah, whereas you were expelled from art school.
Wherever you go, I hope you learn some manners, was the parting words from the headmaster. And you can see I have.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Did your family begin to despair of your rebellious side?
Well, I come from the Cambridgeshire Fens, Norfolk Fens, and there's quite a lot of that there anyway, so it didn't particularly bother them. It was when one was introduced to the middle classes, it got rather difficult.
Well, we're going to have music now to remind you of your days in the Spitting Image Puppet Workshop, because this is music you weren't allowed to play that often, isn't it?
No music was allowed unless it was the weekend, actually, at Spitting Image. When I worked with Peter Fluck, we had tapes, and it was more leisured because we were working for print, not for television. And Peter loves music, much more au fait with it than I am, and started to play Mahler in the studio, which I banned because it affects your mood and it's deeply depressing. And he's a melancholic fellow, Fluck.
Well, and this piece particularly, is, of course, it's a famous music, isn't it, which was used by Visconti in Death in Venice.
Yeah.
But it's very, very beautiful too.
Not if you're trying to meet a deadline. When you can see the deadline coming down the road, you don't need it.
Nevertheless, you want it. So here it is.
Well, no. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Why do you think we love music that is, in a sense, depressing, to use your word? Why is it the cathartic effect that it has, that we can respond to really strong emotion?
It has a direct line to emotion. There's nothing in between. You don't sit there thinking it doesn't look like him, if it, you know, when it's a caricature. Nothing gets in the way if it's done well, like that was.
So, in fact, in music, it is actually that sort of condition of music that makes it so unusual that you can bring whatever you want to it because, as you say, there aren't words or images. Between you and it, it's a direct line.
Yeah, that's why we don't want it on. Yes.
Part of the Adagietto of Mahler's Fifth Symphony, Scholti, George Scholti, conducting the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, making a very rich sound there as well. I'm not sure that I would necessarily have guessed that you had chosen that extremely romantic music, Roger Law. So is there a rather soft centre to you under all the satire?
Not that you can find it.
Well, we'll now change to something more of the kind I might have expected, because this is satirical, it's Court Vile. What brought you to this piece, Roger?
Well, I was at Cambridge School of Art, and I saw the Threepenny Opera at the Arts Theatre in Cambridge, and it just knocked me sideways. I thought, God, I want to do something like that. I already knew I wanted to be a caricaturist, and that introduced me to the German Expressionists and Gross, and of course it's very German and smacks of the barracks. But I stored it away. And when I worked in Canary Wharf, which my first spitting image workshop was there, and that was Thatcher's pet project, and it was really rather like the Threepenny Opera. Buildings went up and were torn down before anybody moved in because someone else wanted to speculate on the rising prices of the buildings. And spitting image was such a difficult show to do that the point where we should have done the Threepenny Opera, we were far too busy, and by the time we could have done it, it was a little late.
This is actually a song of revenge, isn't it?
Yes, which is what caricature is.
Yeah, it's sung by a hotel maid, Jenny, who's about to get her own back on her hometown in a pretty violent way by executing the locals and joining the pirates, and she sings about how she imagines a pirate ship entering the harbour, firing on the city, flattening every building except the hotel. Pirates come ashore, chain up all the townspeople, and present them to Jenny, who orders the pirates to kill them all, and she then sails away with them.
Spitting Image was a bit of a pirate ship between me and you.
Well, the language in this is pretty forthright, shall we say, and I wonder why you particularly liked the Marianne Faithfull recording.
Well, Marianne Faithfull has been knocked about in life and has had to deal with it, and Pirate Jenny is in, well, I was going to say the same boat, and she gets it over very well.
She has one of those voices which sounds a little bit ravaged and gravelly, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like she means what she says.
You lads see me dump the glasses, wash the floors, make the beds. I'm the best of servants. You can kindly throw me pennies and I'll thank you very much. You see me ragged and tattered in this dirty shit hotel. You don't know in hell who's talking. You still don't know in hell who's talking. Still one fine day there will be roars from the harbour and you'll ask what is all that screeching for. And you'll see me smiling as I dunk the glasses. And you'll say, what's she got to smile at for? And the ship, eight sails shining, 55 cannons wide, sir, waits there at the quay. You say, work on, wipe the glasses, my girl, and you slip me a dirty sixpence. And your pennies will be taken and your beds will be made. I doubt if 40 winks will come anybody's way. You still don't know in hell who's talking. You still don't know in hell who's talking. Still, one fine day there'll be a loud bang from the harbour, and you'll ask Jesus Christ what was that bang. And you'll see me standing right behind the window, and you'll say, why's she got the evil eye? And the ship, 8 sails shining, 55 cannons white, sir, will be aimed at this town. So then, lads, time for tears. No more laughs at the bar, for the walls will be at your ankles. And look out, lads, the town will be flat as the ground. This dirty shit hotel will be spared rack and ruin. And you'll say, who's the fancy bitch lives there? You'll say, who's the fancy bitch lives there? There'll be rows of people running round the hotel, and you'll ask, why should they have spared this hovel? And you'll see me in the morning leaving lightly, and you'll say, that one, her, she lived there. The same ship, 8 sails shining, 55 cannons white, sir, flies crossbones and skull. In the midday sun, 100 men will step ashore, all tramping where your shadows crawled. They'll lay their hands on men, hiding shit scared behind doors. Lead them in chains here before this silent woman, and they'll say, well, which ones shall we kill? They'll say, which ones shall we kill? Come the dot of 12, it will be still in the harbour when they ask me, well, who's going to die? And you'll hear me whispering, oh, so sweetly, all of them. And as the soft heads fall, I'll say, hopla. That same ship, 8 sails shining, 55 cannons white, sir, disappears with me.
Marianne Faithfull singing Pirate Jenny's Song of Revenge from Kurt Weill's Threepenny Opera, Dennis Russell Davies conducting the Vienna Radio Symphony Orchestra. The translation was by the Irish playwright Frank McGuinness. That kind of feeling of anger and revenge, that was very much part of what made Spitting Image so powerful, wasn't it?
Well, if you're old enough to cast your mind back to that period, the country was very divided. That was very divisive politician. And not to put too fine a point on it, I would have probably topped my mother to do that show. I was so cross about it. And you could see what was going to happen. A lot of people didn't know what was coming. Peter Flux said to me that what she wanted to do was push the lower middle classes back down, so they were all worried about jobs. Well, we're here.
Do they understand Spitting Image in China, where you work?
Well, that's a good question, actually. I have a good relationship with the people I work with. But Spitting Image, even people who've never seen it know roughly of it, and someone in China got hold of it. And they said, would I do a talk? And I didn't really want to do that, because it's China. But I was talked into it. And I worked very hard on it to try and explain what it was. And I gave the talk, and after I'd finished, there's absolute silence. And I said, look, I worked really hard on this talk, and I'm not going until somebody asks me a question. And there was a long silence, and then they realised they weren't going to get home, and they started to ask questions. And the first question was, why do you hate everybody? And I said, well, I don't hate everybody. I don't like their policies. And this is what you do. You make fun of the policies, and maybe some people will agree with you. That's what you do. They didn't understand that. And there was a long silence, and then someone said, why would they pay you to do this? Now, there's no word in Mandarin for satire. None at all.
And, of course, the concept of objecting to the status quo is completely new to them, really.
Well, they do. I mean, obviously, there are many dissidents, and not just the ones you hear about. And they're very funny in private. I mean, their humour's not a million miles away from ours. There's a lot of punning. There's a lot of musical type, you know, bottoms and mother-in-laws. But there is no tradition of that in China that I know of.
You've obviously become very fond of China.
I'm absolutely fascinated with China, and who wouldn't be? I mean, when I first went there 15 years ago, it was rather like going back to the 50s. Everybody works hard, and there's a chance of a little car or television. And we all know where that will probably end, but it's not my job to tell them. And they have the work ethic. They just get stuck in. It's brilliant. But it's changed so much in the period of time that I've been there. I mean, when I first went there, there were no doors in the doors and no windows in the windows because of the porcelain dust. And I used to paint on the inside of the pots. And one day I was painting the inside of the pot and I came up for air, you know, and I was letting the blood run down again. And I saw someone had put their gloves on my sandwiches. But then they moved. It wasn't. It was rats. Now, things have improved since then. But the skill's incredible, you know.
You've chosen Prokofiev. And I think you discovered this through working with the puppets, didn't you? You did a video of Peter and the Wolf, which was sold across the world and won an Emmy. And the music had already been recorded, but you directed the animation and Sting did the voice.
Yeah, there were three directors on it. The set was the size of a football pitch because you had to lift it up, and it was all out of sequence, which always drove me nuts because I didn't start life as a director. There was a director called Christopher Swan and a young man called Stephen Bedelak, and it was loads of work and loads of fun. Claudia Barda was involved, and we had to tell him what we were about to do. He got very annoyed because the violins were done silently and they obviously weren't playing the correct music. And I said, well, most people are not going to know that. But he wasn't happy about that. But it was, I can't read music, so I had to draw it, a storyboard, with one of those, metronomes. And it was like onomatopoeia. You could actually time with a stopwatch what you were looking at. And that's how we storyboarded the music. My favourite music was the one I've just chosen, which is the overture for the Hebrew themes. We had to do more than Peter and the Wolf. And that was the first co-production in British television. Dorothy Villiers, who arranged it all, wrote a book about it. It became a sort of standard book on it. And I think the Japanese were involved, the Americans. The French took the biggest cut of all. But it was huge fun.
Thank you.
Prokofiev's overture on Hebrew themes. It's got a very jaunty sort of lilt to it, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It comes from the klezmer, I think. Claudio Abbado conducting the Berlin Philharmonic. Abbado took, as you suggested, his music very seriously. Did he ever end up as a spitting image?
Yes, he did. We had him conducting as a puppet.
Have you kept any of these puppets? Were you very fond of them? What's happened to most of them? Have they been sold off?
They were sold at Sotheby's, and I bought a surfboard and went to Australia.
You didn't keep any?
I hate puppets more than politicians.
Spitting Image came to an end in 1996, and as you said, you took yourself off to Oz with your wife Deirdre. You said that you were quite burnt out by then with success and drink. I wonder which was burning burning.
Well, I think that the mad thing was that we did a craft process to a news deadline, and that never really let up. You were 80 hours a week and never less than 60. And it went on, for me, it went on about 13 years because we did a pilot. And then we wound it down. You couldn't just fire everybody. You had to wait till they got work. And that was very depressing because you're doing something that you've done extremely well on a smaller and smaller scale. And the last person I worked for was the grandson of the first person I worked for. And I thought it was time to go. So I thought Australia, partly because the people that worked for us towards the end were short-term contract Aussies. They didn't want a full-time job. And we got very interested in Australia. And it's about as far away as you can go without coming back.
Australian music, rather appropriately, given that we've arrived there. And it's about the Australian casualties of the First World War, isn't it?
Well, I wasn't there for long before I started travelling. I've travelled over Australia and made hundreds of drawings. It amazed me that there were wetlands in Australia, and I spent a lot of time seeking them out and going there. But what shocked me was everywhere you went in Australia were the war memorials. Huge amounts of people were killed. And you thought, well, what were we doing with them? Put them in the front line? Because the lists were longer than we find in our own villages. And I think this song sung by the Pogues, written by Eric Bogle, who is a Scotsman that lives in Australia, just about hits it on the head.
When I was a young man, I carried my pack, and I lived the free life of a rover. From the Murray Spring Basin to the dusty outback, I waltzed my Matilda all over. Then in 1915, my country said, son, it's time to stop rambling, there's work to be done. So they gave me a tin hat and they gave me a gun, and they sent me away to the war. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as we sailed away from the quay. And amidst all the tears, the shouts and the cheers, we sailed off for Gallipoli. Now those who were living did their best to survive in that mad world of death, blood and fire. And for 7 long weeks I kept myself alive, though the corpses around me grew higher. Then a big Turkish shell knocked me earth over its head. And when I awoke in my hospital bed and saw what it had done, Christ, I wished I was dead. Never knew there were worse things than dying. And no more long ago waltzing Matilda to the Greek bushes so far
Quite clever the way he keeps back an actual quote of the Waltzing Matilda tune. The harmony is there, but the tune, you don't get it till the very end, do you?
No.
That was the Pogues with the band playing Waltzing Matilda, a recording made in 1985, and a song discovered by my guest today, Roger Law, when he moved to Australia. This must have been a kind of rebirth for you, finding yourself all over again after the kind of hectic Spitting Image period?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it was rather like being in a bubble, Spitting Image. I mean, I did more than a life sentence. I did 13 years. And when I moved to Sydney, I went to the National Art School, which was the very first prison the English had built there. And they gave me a cell. And that's exactly what I needed, because you can't let lifers out into the world without a sort of halfway house. But yes, I went back to basics, really. I started drawing again and just seeing what I could do. And I'd worked with lots of people, good people here, but I was on my own. And the first results were an absolute disaster. Everything I put in the kiln came out like crisps. And I went to Melbourne for a week while they stopped laughing.
How did you make the transition to China then?
Well, I travelled all over Australia making drawings. I had hundreds of drawings, and I didn't quite know what to do with them. And I met a guy called Hoshian, who was Chinese, who had become an Australian. And he worked in Jingdezhen. And his work was stunning. I saw it on display in Sydney, and he became a friend. And he agreed to meet me in Jingdezhen. And he introduced me to the workshops. I didn't immediately start work because it was so different. But the more I thought about it, I knew I'd go back, and I did.
Do you think that your career in ceramics might have been even easier if you'd purchased a frock and a wig?
Well, quite possibly, but it's frightfully difficult finding pretty frocks for a bloke my size.
I think the beard would really lend something to the whole ensemble. Music that you've been listening to recently, which features a Korean soloist, you say that this really lifts you wherever you are.
Well, I haven't any deadlines now, so I can let the music interfere in the studio. And I just love this music. I play it a lot.
It's Beethoven's Violin Concerto, and we're going to hear the slow movement.
That was part of Beethoven's violin concerto by Kyung-hwa Chung. And she keeps things on an even keel in the studio these days.
It was a very beautiful performance of the slow movement of the Beethoven violin concerto with the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra, conducted by Klaus Tennstedt, marvellous conductor. A recording from 1989. And by the way, all the details of today's music are on the Private Passions page of the Radio 3 website. We've had a remarkably varied list of music from you, Roger, from the Chinese pop music at the beginning, through Kurt Weill to Mahler and Beethoven. And actually, even the Pogue song reminded me of songs of protest and the poetry of Hausmann and Hardy, where young people were sent off to war and, you know, the unnecessary, so it seemed to them, slaughter of thousands of young people. So there's a lot of your feeling of anger in all of these pieces, even when it's subdued. But then in the Beethoven, for example, and in the Mahler, there is that side of you that perhaps transcends the anger and perhaps where you find something of your soul.
Let's hope so, eh?
Do you feel that, given the way your life has panned out, that there are places you like to escape to from yourself in music or in pottery or whatever it is?
Of course. I mean, that once you're completely obsessed with what you're doing, it's about the only peace you're going to get.
Well, the last song hints at that, or at a desire to run away. The lyrics are, "I just left myself today. I couldn't wait to get away." Tell me about this.
Well, Jerry Farrell, who's running my exhibition at the Sladmore, said, "I want this to be an ongoing arrangement." And I thought to myself, I'm 73. How ongoing does he want it? Now, in the Fens, when I was a kid, people used to threaten old people with a black teapot, which I didn't know what did they mean. And what they used to do was they put poppy tea in a teapot and give it to them, and they would just fade away. And in the not-too-distant future, I may have to drink some poppy tea, and that's what this music... I should be playing this music.
You even would like it at your funeral, I think.
I would like it at my funeral, and I made a black teapot. Covered in tarantulas and snakes, and I'll have it on top of a hearse.
Roger Law, thank you very much.
Well, what fun. Thank you.
Well, I just left myself today. Hell, I couldn't wait to get away. There's still a smear across the mirror that I have been but it won't reflect on me. Again, because I just left myself today. Yeah, I just packed me up and went away. I didn't float, I didn't fly, I did not transcend. No, I just walked out on me again. Again.
Terry Allen with I Just Left Myself, ending this week's edition of Private Passions. Michael Barclay's guest was Roger Law, and the producer was Elizabeth Burke for Loftus. You can download that programme and many others in the series by going to the podcasts page of the BBC Radio 3 website. Next week, at the same time, Michael Barclay's guest will be the crime writer John Harvey.
The London Jazz Festival brings together the world of jazz in one place.
So many people who don't get to hear the music throughout the rest of the year come along and explore what it is that we're all raving about the rest of the time.
It's this fantastic musical celebration.
Celebrating jazz on BBC Radio 3 and Radio 2.
It really highlights how amazing the scene in the UK is.
You're always guaranteed to hear something you've never heard before.
Join us for an evening of great music to launch the 2014 London Jazz Festival, beginning with Jazz Voice, live from the Barbican. And at 11 o'clock, there's a special edition of Jazz on 3 from Ronnie Scott's with me, Jez Nelson. The Jazz Season, from 7:30 on Friday evening, here on BBC Radio 3.
And don't forget that before that, Jez Nelson is here tomorrow night, Monday night as ever, with the regular edition of Jazz on 3 at 11 o'clock. Hello, I'm John Shea. Welcome to this Sunday afternoon's programmes here on BBC Radio 3. In a couple of minutes, another chance to hear last Monday's live lunchtime concert from the Wigmore Hall. The pianist Alexander Gavrilyuk plays Schumann and Brahms. And then in an hour's time, we've highlights of a concert from last weekend at the Brighton Early Music Festival. And that's in the Early Music Show with Lucy Skeeping at 2 o'clock. It's now coming up to 2 minutes past one. This is BBC Radio 3, and here's the latest news. Remembrance services have been taking place across the country and abroad for the servicemen and women who've died in conflicts past and present. The Queen led the commemorations at the Cenotaph at Whitehall. She, along with political dignitaries, laid a poppy wreath in memory of the dead before thousands of military veterans and civilians took part in a march past the monument. A service has also taken place at Kandahar military base in Afghanistan, where the last remaining British troops in the country are stationed. American officials have said they're trying to confirm whether or not the leader of Islamic State, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, was killed in an airstrike in northern Iraq. Coalition warplanes targeted a convoy of armed trucks near Mosul, which were believed to be carrying senior IS personnel. Talks are taking place between the American Secretary of State, John Kerry, and his Iranian counterpart, the Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. The negotiations are aimed at removing barriers to a deal on Iran's nuclear programme, which is due to be finalised later this month. The Spanish region of Catalonia is holding an informal referendum on independence. The vote isn't recognised by the Spanish government, but the turnout is expected to be high. Tens of thousands of people are celebrating the 25th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. There are outdoor concerts and exhibitions to mark the moment that paved the way for the country's reunification just under a year later. Later, helium-filled balloons will be released from where the structure once stood at the exact moment that the first blows to the wall were struck. One of the most famous illustrations from the Winnie the Pooh books is being sold at auction. E.H. Shepherd's ink drawing of Pooh, Piglet and Christopher Robin playing the game Pooh Sticks will go under the hammer at Sotheby's in London next month. It's expected to fetch up to £150,000. And the weather. It'll be mostly dry with bright or sunny spells. There'll be some rain lingering in the southeast and in south and western coastal areas becoming heavy later. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at very nearly 4 minutes past one. So time now for today's Radio 3 lunchtime concert, and presenting it at the Wigmore Hall in London last Monday was Petrock Trelawney.
Hello, welcome. This lunchtime, the pianist Alexander Gavrilyuk plays Schumann and Brahms. Gavrilyuk was born in Ukraine, where he lived until he became a teenager. Then his family relocated to Sydney, where he was to spend the next decade of his life. Today he'll play Brahms' Paganini Variations, a showy, virtuosic challenge for any performer. Not that that stopped Brahms once describing them as being nothing more than finger exercises. We begin with Kindertsänen, the Scenes from Childhood by Schumann, a work that he was equally modest about. In 1838, Robert Schumann and Clara Wieck, the young woman he was in love with, were separated when her tricky, disapproving father had attempted to get her out of the way by sending her off on a 7-month concert tour. but the young couple were at least still able to write to each other. Perhaps it was an echo of what you once said to me, Robert wrote on one occasion, that sometimes I seemed like a child. I was suddenly visited by inspiration and knocked off 30 quaint little things. You will enjoy them, though you have to forget that you are a virtuoso. Eventually, he selected 13 of these short pieces for publication, each one exquisitely crafted and setting a childhood mood. The set includes the hauntingly beautiful opening piece of Foreign Lands and People. We hear a child pleading, the manically gleeful Blind Man's Buff, the exuberant Knight of the Hobby Horse. And at the end, child falls asleep, and then the composer holds his audience rapt. In the closing, the poet speaks. Alexander Gavrilyuk making his way onto the Wigmore Hall stage to play Schumann's Kinderzenen.